Sure, y'all come on in. Take your shoes off, sit on down.
Y'all listening to
In the Corner, back by the woodpile.
My guest today has appeared on the Travel Channel and PBS, has been featured in Visions and Unix magazine, and won several awards for his uncanny ability to photograph and make audio recordings of ghosts, spirits, or whatever you'd call the not still alive. The man's name is Mike Sears, and he heads his own investigation team called Volunteer State Paranormal Research here in Middle Tennessee. Mike and I tried to conduct this podcast in an old graveyard, but we got ran off by some souls still with their skin, and maybe scarier than those without. So we headed on back to the woodpile, where Sears not only shared with me his story, but some of his very creepy cool recordings, which you'll hear later in the podcast. I want to ask you about your first experience with, I assume, do you use the word ghost?
Yeah, I use ghost or spirits. Even the spirits and ghosts even call themselves that. Okay. We ask who's here.
So some are aware that they are ghosts?
Correct.
Okay.
My first experience was at age 5. I was living in Western New York in a house. The parents had just moved in. We only been in it for a couple of years. And the house was built in the 1930s. And I had gone to bed. I was about 5 or 6 years old. And I felt someone like watching me, and I rolled over on the side of the bed, and there in this antique chair in my bedroom was a little girl in a white Victorian dress with the black real thick curls on her hair. And she just looked at me and waved and smiled and rubbed my eyes, thinking I was imagining it, and thought maybe my sisters may have been doing a trick. And so I just rolled over to pretend that it was, you know, my imagination. And I just kept on feeling this presence there watching me, so I rolled over, and this time she wasn't in the chair. She was actually standing next to my bed and looked at me and waved, and I jumped out of bed and ran downstairs to tell my parents what I had seen, and they said, oh, you're just, you know, dreaming, or it's your active imagination. Mm-hmm. And my parents weren't big ghost believers at the time.
Did anything ever come of it? Like, was she trying to tell you something, or?
No, I didn't hear her talking or saying anything. She was just real friendly, you know. She smiled and waved at me. She had like a little handkerchief, and she was like in a white Victorian type dress, like almost like a christening dress that, you know, from that time period. And but she didn't say anything. She just walked, waved, and smiled.
And that's the only time you saw her?
Yeah, it was the only time I saw her. We had experiences in the house as time went on. I remember my sister had a little toy wood piano, and it was playing by itself upstairs. My dad and I were the only ones home at the time. We were watching TV on the main floor, and we could hear it being played upstairs. Wow. And he had asked, he goes, didn't your sister go shopping with your mom? And I'm like, yeah. And I went up, and nobody was up there. Uh-huh. So, and we had heard things, you know, doors closing and people walking upstairs that we thought, you know, might have been someone at home at the time, but we just brushed it off, you know, active imagination, stuff like that.
Next, Mike went to tell me an epic story about his father dying, then coming back to life, then Mike getting to meet some of his father's demons, so to speak.
1994, I was living in Florida, and my dad had passed away. And let me tell you a little bit about that first, because that leads into the haunting. Mm-hmm. My dad was dying of cancer, and we had him under hospice care in the month of June. And during that time, he was real weak. He had to be hand-fed and helped with everything. And he, you know, couldn't walk unless he was holding on to you to help him get across the house. And as time went on, his health got worse. He went into a coma and for about 3 days. And on the third day, hospice had told us his temperature was at 107. And they said that they felt he was going to pass away probably that night. So they asked us, it goes, if you want us here tonight, since he looks like he's going to pass away, we can stay, or just feel free to call us at any time if you need help. And my mom says, no, we can handle it. If, you know, if it does come to that, we'll give you a call. And I was working for doing security for the space program at the time. So I told my mom, I said, I'm scheduled to work, but if you need me, you know, come wake me. And if he definitely does pass away, come get me. And so that night, about 3 o'clock in the morning, he had passed away. And she had grieved at his side for about a half hour. And before she could go tell me he had passed away, he sat up out of the bed, goes, where are you going? I need to talk to you. And this guy hadn't talked in almost a week plus, because prior to his coma, he was too weak to talk. And And my mom was like in shock, and he goes, come back here, I need to talk to you. He goes, I begged him to allow me to come back to tell you and Mike that I was going to be okay on the other side. And she sat at his side for several hours, and he talked to her and talked to past family members and loved ones and friends that had passed away, and he interpreted. My mom said she couldn't see anybody there, but she said she could feel like this electrical energy in the air. Her hair was standing up on end. And one of the things that was probably most amazing is his first wife had passed away in 63. And he had met her in Japan when he was stationed in Japan, and she was Japanese. And he spoke fluent Japanese to her and would interpret back and forth to my mom and say she wanted to let you know that she's going to take care of me on this side and to thank you for taking care of him, you know, me on this side, you know, kind of deal. And by that time, it was a little after 7 in the morning. And she's like, well, let me go get Mike. I mean, he's going to be shocked. And he goes, well, before you do that, he goes, I really want to freshen up. I like to take a shower. And she's like, well, here, let me help you. And he got out of the bed himself and walked to his own bedroom, took a shower, and got dressed in clean clothes and got in his own bed. And she come to get me. She's like, you won't believe what happened last night. She goes, I won't tell you. You just got to see it for yourself. And so I started heading out to the living room where the hospice bed was. And she goes, no, he's not there. And I was shocked not to see him there. And she goes, he's in his own bed. So I went there to go check on him, and he was all the color back in his face. He looked healthy, which was amazing. And so we started talking about, you know, things. He, you know, apologized for being so strict and this and that. And so long story short, he ended up spending the whole entire day with us. He helped me cook dinner. We had dinner together. We watched movies and went through family photos and books. So he ended up spending the whole day with us. And about midnight, he was getting tired. And he said, if I don't wake up in the morning, I just want to let you guys know that I'm going to be okay. There's nothing to worry about. And so we said our farewells to him just in case he didn't wake up in the morning. And he stayed in his own bed. So the next morning, hospice knocks on the door at 8 o'clock in the morning, and my mom comes waking me up. She goes, hospice here. And I said, all right, let him in. She goes, no, you don't understand. You know, your dad's in his own bed, and he's back the way he was. He's back in a coma. All the color was gone on his face and that. And so they came in, and they were really upset that he was not in the hospital bed. And we tried to explain what had happened the day before. They didn't believe us. And so they chastised my mom and I, and they had to call extra help to carry him back to the hospital bed. And 3 days later, he passed away. And some of the things that happened after he passed away, he said he would do his best to, if he could, come back to give us signs that he was okay. And one of the things I asked him that day when he came back to life, I said, what are you going to miss on this side? And he had said, he goes, well, I'm really going to miss is, he goes, I put all this work in it and never got a damn fruit off it. He goes, I planted an avocado tree, the orange tree, and the pineapple plant, and I was really looking forward to having fruit off them. And that year after he passed away, we had two avocados that only produced on the tree, two pineapples and two oranges, one each for my mom and I. So we took that as a sign from him. One of the other things is that right after he had passed away the second time, every day on the hour that he had passed away, the window where the hospice bed was, we had a red cardinal, and that was his favorite songbird, would come tapping on the window. And on the fifth day, I go to my mom, I said, hey, do you notice this cardinal's always showing up the time when dad passed away? I said, do you think that's a sign from him since that's his favorite bird? And after I said that to her, the bird stopped pecking the window and flew away and never came back. So we took that as a sign. And then the day of his funeral, we came back from his funeral, and I made a nice dinner for my mom. And I said, do you want to sit at the table and listen to music? I have a row, big jukebox that holds 100 records in it. And I said, I could turn on the jukebox, or do you rather watch the news? And she's like, well, I'd rather watch the news. And I said, all right. So I said, I'll go set up, you know, TV trays out there. And I brought her dinner out there. And as I was going back to the kitchen to dish myself up, I hear the jukebox turn on and select a record. And the music started blaring out of it. And she yells out, hey, I thought we weren't going to listen to music. And I said, no, I thought you did it. And she's like, no. She says, can you turn it off? So I go over there, turn it off, and the off switch is on the back of it. And when I go to the off switch, I look down, and there's the plug out of the outlet laying on the floor. So it's not even plugged in, and it's all lit up and playing the music. So I bend over, and I pick up the plug, and I hold it up in the air and show her, and she's like, are you kidding me? And I said, no. And she's like, how is that possible? And then she starts crying because the song it selected, it picked Garth Brooks' If Tomorrow Never Comes, which is about a guy passing away, wondering if, you know, person would love him after he's gone kind of deal. Mm-hmm. And I mean, to pick, you know, it has 200 selections, and to pick that record.
Right.
That August, the same year, I went to bed about 3 o'clock in the morning. I thought someone had broken in the house. I could feel a presence in the room. Mm-hmm. And so I tried to reach up to hit the light by my headboard, and I slept with a gun. I used to be a cop in the Air Force. Mm-hmm. So I slept with a gun. Mm-hmm. And before I could get to it, I felt two hands grab me by the ankles mm-hmm. and start pulling me off the bed. Mm-hmm. And my body got probably from the waist down was off the bed. I kicked free mm-hmm. and climbed back up on the bed. And before I could get up to the headboard, mm-hmm. someone jumped on my back mm-hmm. and shoved my face into the pillow. And I'm screaming in the pillow to try to wake up my mom to let her know that someone was in the house. And I had my hands off the side, and I broke free and hit the light, grabbed my gun, turned around, and nobody was there. And my bedroom door was closed. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, what the hell just happened kind mm-hmm. of deal. So I go to wake her up to let her know what's going on. She goes to wash her face. She's like, hang on, let me wake up. And as she came out of the restroom, I heard something coming down the hallway, and I thought it was my Akita, which is a mm-hmm. big, like, husky-type dog. And this force of energy hit me square in the chest and lifted me off her bedroom floor, and I flew about 8 to 10 feet backwards mm-hmm. and hit her bedroom wall. And she was like, oh, my God, what just happened? I said, I'm being attacked again. Mm-hmm. And it lasted for a half hour where I was constantly being grabbed. She could literally see the hair. I wasn't wearing a shirt. All the hair on my chest and my arms were just straight out. Mm-hmm. And I had goosebumps on goosebumps. And she kept calm through it. It was amazing. But it lasted for about a half hour. He kept on going in and out and grabbing me and pulling me. And so the next morning, we're talking about it. And one of our friends, one of the hospice nurses, became good friends with us. And she was believing stuff. And she became good friends with my dad while she was taking care of him. And she came over and explained what had happened that night. Mm-hmm. And she was like, wow. And then later that night, my mom called her mother, my grandmother. And as she's talking on the phone, I got attacked again.
Really?
Yeah. And I was like held in a bear hug. I mm-hmm. couldn't speak or anything. I was paralyzed. Mm-hmm. And it was just the haunting just got worse as months, as you know, days, weeks, and months went on. And there was days I'd come home from work and I'd have knickknacks from the shelves thrown at me. I'd have light bulbs exploding. Mm-hmm. Lights would start, you know, flickering. Door slamming. Or you could feel the energy get so intense when I walked in the house. And then all of a sudden you could just feel someone push you mm-hmm. square in the chest or in the shoulders, and I get slammed into a wall. Mm-hmm. And this just kept on going on and on. And so my neighbor, he was a minister, and we asked him if he could come over and bless the house.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't know anything, you know, right. We were pretty green at the time for paranormal. And so he came over with some friends, and he tried to bless the house, and as soon as he left, all the doors in the house started opening and slamming. My room was like ice cold. You could see your breath in it. And I was like, I ain't sleeping in there, you know, that night. And so that didn't help. Got interviewed by a Catholic priest, and he was going to do like an exorcism on the house. Uh-huh. And he had to talk to the, can't remember the technical term right offhand, but the head Catholic church there in Orlando, Florida, and they said, well, since we're not Catholic, they wouldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And he apologized. He was a real nice guy, and he actually gave me his personal rosary out of his pocket. Uh-huh. Said, you know, hang on to this, maybe uh-huh. this will help. And it did help some. So as time went on, it just got worse and worse. We brought in my mom and I, after my dad's death, we had a weekend. It was our first weekend after everything had settled down, and we went for a drive, and we found a psychic fair. Mm-hmm. I met this medium there. And I was very skeptical at the time of them. And I said, you know, who's used by the police? And they said, oh, we have one lady here. She's used by the state police of Florida and mm-hmm. in the sheriff's office. And I said, I'd like to meet her. And I had told her, I'm not telling you nothing. Just, mm-hmm. you know, read me or whatever
yeah.
you do. And,
go.
And she was given exact dates and ages and things mm-hmm. that happened to me. She was like dead on. So mm-hmm. she impressed me. So I called her and I said, hey, do you know how to get rid of ghosts? And mm-hmm. she's like, no, I don't. And I said, well, you know anybody could help us? And she says, well, I can come in and read the house and tell you who's there. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, okay. So she came over and I said, that would be help so we could figure out what the hell's causing this. Why am I being attacked? And when she walked in the house, she's like, wow, you got three here. And she linked it to my dad, saying that they were three men that knew my dad in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And my dad worked like special ops type stuff. Mm-hmm. with MACV, where they did a lot of guerrilla warfare fighting, worked with CIA and stuff like that. And she says there was a mission that he didn't agree upon that wasn't for God country type thing, was for personal gain. And he wasn't going to partake in it, so he didn't go. And they went and supposedly got killed, and they were pissed off that he didn't go. And they had been haunting him since Vietnam.
Really?
And
did he know it?
If he did, he was keeping it to himself. We always chalked it up as PTSD because my dad had some serious nightmares growing up as a kid. I mean, some real violent stuff. And maybe they were attacking them. We don't know. But she felt that that was connected to them. And, I mean, things she described about my dad's military service, she was dead on. And I'm like, how does she know this? And so she walked in my bedroom. She says, they like this room for some reason. She goes, go get a Bible if you got a Bible and open it up and put it on the bed. So I went and got it and put it on there. And then she says, go get some white paper and start cutting crosses and putting them up. And I said, all right. So went and did that. And when I was cutting it up the first time, my mom and our friend that was the nurse, they witnessed it with the medium. The Bible started flipping pages like a fan was blowing on it. And they said it literally lifted off the bed about 6 to 8 inches and slammed shut and then dropped back down on the bed. So they called me in. So I come running in there and they're telling me what happened. I said, wow. And she's like, open it up again. Start reading from it. So I open it up and I start reading it. All of a sudden the pages start turning in front of me and it literally lifted up. As it lifted up, everybody stepped out of the room. We went out of the room. We were watching it. And it just hovering above the bed, probably about this high. And then it slammed shut. And when it slammed shut, the bedroom door went, whoom, right in our face. And the medium goes, I'm out of here. And she had said, light some white candles. And my mom goes, well, we don't have any white candles. The only white candles we have is those little tea votive candles. So she lit a whole bunch of those across the mantle of the fireplace. There was like six of them. And the medium had some of her stuff out in the living room and she went to go get it. The candle flames were about a foot high on all the little candles. And she's like, I'm out of here. You need a priest to bless this house or something. She goes, I can't help you. And she ran out of the house. We ended up, my mom had a student. She was a school teacher, middle school taught middle school. And she had a student that was a full-blooded Indian, Cherokee. And she found out from him that his father was a medicine man. So she called him and says, I don't know what to do. We're at our wit's end, you know. And so she asked if he could help us. And he goes, yeah, I could do an Indian, you know, blessing, you know, type ceremony. And he came in and spent about like 8 hours doing it. And he taught me a lot, you know, telling me to stand up and not show fear to the spirits and this and that. And after his cleansing ceremony, nothing happened for a full year. It went away. We thought it was all done with. And then my mom went on vacation. And the first night she was gone, I was in my room and my Akita come running in the bedroom, scared to death, jumped up on the bed. And I'm like, what's wrong? And all of a sudden I could feel that energy again. I'm like, oh, great. And then all of a sudden every door in the house possible was opening and closing and slamming at the same time. So I had yelled out, you know, I'm not scared of you. You know, whatever you want, bring it. I'm done with it. And the door stopped. And after that, we would have activity, but when it happened, I would just laugh, go, yeah, whatever, not impressed. And it just got weaker and weaker as time went on. And but it lasted for about 6 years until I got married and moved out of the house. My mom sold the house 3 years later after I moved out. I moved out in 2000. She had sold it in 2003. The guy that bought it, he lived in there less than a year and died in the house. So we don't know if it was paranormal, if he died or not. And I had saw in the paper, I was into antique collecting and that, and it said the estate sale that this guy was an avionic instructor for pilots, and he had a whole bunch of aviation collectibles. So I was like, oh, I want to go to this estate sale. And then I looked at the address and I said, oh my God, that's my old house. And so I went in there and I was kind of leery to go in the house because I was wondering, you know, am I going to be attacked in front of these people? But I couldn't feel any of that energy there. And so I don't know if it's still haunted this day, but my mom, she just went down to Florida last spring, I think it was, and she said that the people that had it after the man that passed away, they had bought it, they had lost the house to foreclosure, so it's abandoned right now, last I heard. And after that, because of it was so terrifying, that haunting, I mean, constantly being attacked, and I just stayed away from the paranormal. I didn't even share it with friends and that.
I was going to ask you, I mean, how, you know, obviously people are going to look at you funny and is it something that at first you were ashamed to tell people that?
Well, I tried to share it with some friends. I had one friend that was real close. He was a cop and he came over to the house and witnessed the activity, and he wouldn't step back in my house after that. And my mom, who being a school teacher, she, you know, during lunch with a fellow co-worker, she had shared what was going on, and all of a sudden she was called into the principal's office and told her that she was on suspension until she got a psychological evaluation.
Uh-huh. Sure.
So she almost lost her job out of it. And luckily the school counselor believed her, and she didn't lose her job. So after that, we didn't really, the only people we shared it with was close family. And I remember my mom, when we left, you know, to move to Tennessee, I had some notes and stuff on the haunting and all that. And she's like, "You want these?" And I said, "No, I don't want to remember that." That was a scary time in my life.
Now we're going to listen to and let Mike explain three of his recordings of ghosts.
Yeah, that was captured at Ripavilla Plantation in Spring Hill, Tennessee. We went and did several investigations there and found out it was very, very, very haunted, very active. We were in what they call Jenny's room on the second floor. And there were several spirits that we had made contact with. Jimmy Pierce, which through the spirit box said his name was Jimmy Pierce, and he was located from Texas. He came from Texas to fight in the Confederacy. And then Nathaniel, that was the Nathaniel Cheers who built the house. We had heard that through the docent and the historians there that the Nathaniel really liked his bourbon. So I had brought some Kentucky bourbon and brought a vintage mug to pour it in, and I had made an offering. And I learned through research that sometimes communicating with spirits, you bring gifts. They call them like trigger items to hopefully trigger paranormal activity. And so I had poured that in the mug, and our EMF meter started spiking and everything during the time when, after I had said, "Come up here and, you know, have some bourbon." And we had about five or six recorders going on, and all of those recorders, only one captured that clear as day, gruffy man's voice saying, "I love you," after I said, "I brought you some bourbon."
Hey, I'm gonna pour you some whiskey if you're up here, or Tom, brought you some Kentucky bourbon.
Yeah. Now, what do you think is happening there? Like, again, going back to the pure science of it, if it's an electrical cloud or whatever, how are they able to make sounds?
At Ripavilla is one of the few places that I experienced this, where we would get loud pops and snaps and cracks on our recorders. And when we slowed it down, it would be a voice. And
can I play devil's advocate?
Yeah.
If you slowed down any pop, would it kind of sound like a voice?
No. We've done that. I've actually snapped fingers. I whacked pencils on boards. You know, try to replicate different sounds, and it just sounded like a muted sound.
Yeah.
And I've had people saying, "Oh, it's power suggestion what you want it to be." And I'm like, "Yeah, but I've had it where one of the best examples is we were in the cellar, and I was with Lance Whalen, and he captured clear as day a man go yes, and the same time period I was standing 3 feet in front of Lance. And my recorder had a loud snap at the same time he captured the yes.
Okay.
And when I slowed down the snap, it turned in clear as day, the yes. And it was, you know, it matched his yes. So that kind of backed up my theory with the snap. But I've had it where I've slowed it down where there's full sentences. And I mean, if it's creating different words, it's an intelligent response to the question that it's slowing down to match.
Yeah.
So. I mean, if it was just general any words, it should be saying all kinds of words that, you know, going, "Oh, that sounds like pizza." You know, why is he saying pizza? You know? But, you know, here's an intelligent reason. You know, we had one where it was a suicide case, and we had asked the question, "Do you have a message for your dad?" And everybody had nothing on their recorder. And the psychic sensitive Kiki that was on the team, she goes, "Mike, there's something on my recorder. I can hear it's like faint." And when I took the layers off, I could see this spike, a snap. It was a real faint snap. So I took that snap and amplified it. And when I slowed it down, it turned into this full sentence saying, "Tell him I love him." And I remember playing that for the client. I said, "Here it is, uncleaned." And they're like, "Yeah, we don't hear anything." And I said, and then I showed them the different layers of how I edit it. And they were just blown away. And they go, "Yeah, we hear that clear as day saying, tell him I love him."
So explain, they're not going anywhere.
I was a docent, a historical tour guide for a museum. It's the Clement Railroad Museum, the Holbrook Hotel in Dixon. And I had volunteered there. When I first got there, they were very like, "Oh, we heard you're in the paranormal. You know, we because they had had other teams approach there, and I said, yeah, I'm into it, but that's not why I'm here at the museum. Yeah. I came here to, because I love history. Mm-hmm. And they're like, all right, well, stay away from the paranormal. Well, then, after 6 months there, there was a lot of employees having experiences with the paranormal, seeing full body apparitions, mm-hmm. things moving and stuff like that. So the director had asked me to do like a mini investigation. Mm-hmm. And I started bringing in my recorder. Mm-hmm. And if there was nobody in the museum, I would just pull it out and ask mm-hmm. a few questions. And I started getting replies to mm-hmm. the questions. So I said, wow, there's actually something here. So finally one day they allowed us to do an overnight investigation there. And we had done an EVP session on the top floor, and I said, well, let's just take a break and come back up here in a few minutes. And so we left two of the EMF meters, the MEL meters that can record EMF readings, mm-hmm. and two recorders recording after we left. And we went down to the dining hall. And on the recording, you can hear us in the background from downstairs mm-hmm. talking. And when we came back upstairs, we checked the readings on the EMF meters, and it was like a 2.5, 2.6 area on the EMF spikes. So I told the team members that left their recorders there, I said, let's tag it and make sure you check your recorders to see that time when we're on break, if there was anything. And one recorder had nothing, and the other one, loud and clear as day, you hear this woman goes, they're not going anywhere. Which sounds like she had looked, because the chairs were near the stair rail that looks down to mm-hmm. the main floor, which sounds like she had gone to the rail to look over to see if we had left. Uh-huh. We were staying there, and it's like almost midnight at the time we were there. And we had shared that online, and the Avalon Foundation, that's out of Ohio, their scientific group, they thought the EVP was too good to be true. Mm-hmm. They said, there's no way that's a spirit talk, and that's a human contamination. Mm-hmm. And they go, we would be happy to try to debunk this. You know. And I said, yeah, we'll send you the original recording. We have mm-hmm. nothing to hide. And a few months went by, and they sent us back a 30-page printout paperwork of full sound spectral analysis and mm-hmm. everything, and said that that voice was not the octaves to be a human mm-hmm. response on the recording. Hmm. So that was pretty cool that they couldn't debunk that. Can you tell us your name? That was captured in the house I live in now. My house is very active that I moved into. The second day we moved in, we didn't even have furniture. We were just bringing in stuff. I brought in a folding table to put my computer tower on. Mm-hmm. And I just got on the computer, and I thought the wife was bringing me down a drink from the kitchen down. It's a finished cellar mm-hmm. area. And she was coming down. I thought she was coming down the stairs. And here comes this lady in her hair in a bun in a white dress coming down the stairs, stops in front of me, looks at me and smiles, and then keeps on walking and goes right through the wall. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, whoa, we just moved into a haunted house. And I'm going to wipe away. Great, I don't want to live in a haunted house because I lived through that extreme haunting.
Clock out. Yeah.
And so then later, my daughter, she was 3 at the time when we moved in, she kept on saying she wanted to play with this little boy that was playing in our front yard. And every time we go to look, we're like, what little boy? There's no little boy out there. And mm-hmm. she goes, he was just there. Mm-hmm. And she described him. And so I finally went to the neighbors and said, hey, who's got the kid in the neighborhood? And my daughter, like, you know, introduced me to my daughter. And he goes, no, you're the first family in a while that's had kids on this street. Mm-hmm. We're happy you're here because we haven't heard kids playing in the street in quite a while. Mm-hmm. It's nice to hear kids again. And I'm like, but my daughter keeps on seeing this little boy. Is it someone's grandkid or something? They're like, mm-hmm. no, not that we know of. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, as time went on, she started talking and playing up in her room. And she was saying she was playing with Joe mm-hmm. and sometimes called him Sunshine. Mm-hmm. And we're like, okay. Mm-hmm. And then one night, we woke up. I thought, I didn't like cats sleeping on bed because of my allergies. Mm-hmm. And I felt it's felt like someone sat down by my feet at the end of the bed, and I thought it was the cat. And I told my wife, I said, hey, get the cat off the bed. She sat up and gasped. And mm-hmm. I said, are you okay? And she goes, there was a little boy sitting at the end of the bed. And she says he jumped off the bed. And I literally felt that leave the bed. Mm-hmm. And she said he walked across the footboard, mm-hmm. in front of the footboard there, and then vanished. And she described what she saw to my daughter. And she goes, oh, yeah, that's Joe. And then later on, one day I came up from the office, and there sitting at the kitchen table was the little boy with blonde curly hair, smiled at me and vanished. Mm-hmm. And through the years, we've seen him multiple times. But after I got into paranormal investigating, we started doing EVP sessions mm-hmm. and asking, you know, we started a spirit box, mm-hmm. which is a AM/FM radio that's on a continuous sweep. And we kept on going, who's here? And it kept on going, Joe's here, Joe, Joe. And we're like, can you tell me your name again? And it would intelligent response say, Joe again. We're like, wow, that's matching what my daughter said. And go, what else can we call you? And it goes, Sunshine. Mm-hmm. So we did this session in the house with the team, and we had 5 recorders going on. Mm-hmm. And we asked, can you tell us your name, please? And we didn't hear that response until he went over the recordings. One of my team members out of the five recorders captured that. My name is Sunshine.
Can you tell us your name?
Avalon again said, that's just so intelligent, so clear.
Do you ever find out historically who this kid was?
No, we did some research, and in 1920s and 30s, there's a couple young people about that age group that's named Joseph Sunshine.
Really?
And Burns. So we're not sure if that's him, because the cemeteries are not even located. And the property where our house is, it's a cul-de-sac neighborhood. It's like almost like a gated community. There's only one way in. And they're all new houses that were built in the 1980s to 1990s. Mm-hmm. And I had done some research, and no one can give me the family. No one, we could find records on the family, but there was a sheriff, a deputy I met, who grew up in the town. I had asked him, and he says, yeah, there used to be an old big farmhouse there that was abandoned when he was a kid back in the 70s and 60s. And he doesn't remember who owned it, but it was abandoned. And, and when the property was sold, they leveled that and put that housing area in there. But so far, no luck. And I don't know who the woman is. You know, her time period of dress is, I would say, late 1800s to early 1900s. And the boy, he's dressed, I would say, from 1930s to 40s. He's wearing like a plaid shirt with denim coveralls. And we've seen him multiple times and captured. And every time we do EVP sessions now in the house, you know, we ask for him and he comes through.
Do you feel like your field attracts some of the wrong people sometimes?
Yeah, I think some are, I guess you call it like glory hounds, are in it for, you know, for the glory and attention. Or there's the thrill seekers. You know, they want to have that experience. It's because they've seen it on TV and the movies, going, wow, that's cool. He saw a full body apparition, or he got dragged or thrown into a wall. I want to experience that. And sometimes you got to be careful what you wish for. I've seen people that have gone into places and get attacked and haven't touched it since. You know, and they got that 1,000-yard stare going, you know, what the hell did I just get into?
Does it happen that you bust some of these people, like maybe fabricating stuff just so because they want to be famous? Or
that the team I worked with for 2 years, the team leader was fabricating stories on the website. And he had a magazine that, you know, he said he was in the, you know, the magazine. I kept on asking, I'd love to see this magazine. And he's like, oh, I got it somewhere. That was done, you know, before you joined the team. That was a couple of years old. And thanks to the internet, I found the issue magazine on eBay, so I bought it. And it was nowhere in the magazine. And found out that he had photoshopped, you know, his name on the cover. So
Wow, that's heavy, man.
So I called him out on it, you know, and I said, I got the magazine right here, and you're not in it. And he tried to backpedal out of it, and I finally said, I'm done working with you. I said, you just lost all credibility. I said, how can I trust you if what's paranormal anymore?
Yeah, so you have to deal with that a lot, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
So I got to ask, how come this stuff happens to you and not me? I want it to happen. I've tried to seek it out and spend the night in places that are supposedly haunted, and it never happens. So what do you think?
I'm not sure why that. I've had a lot of people going, why you? Because I've had some amazing experiences.
Have you been attacked, like, ever, like, by people, like, thinking, like, man, you're a fraud and you're just making this up? I mean,
yeah, I've had that.
Well, what's the worst experience about that, if you don't mind me asking?
I've never had anybody, like, usually just online, you know, online.
Oh, like trolls.
Yeah, but in person, I've never had anybody, you know, call me out. It's all true. My wife has witnessed it. You know, that's a nice thing. You know, my mom's witnessed it.
Makes you feel like you're not crazy, at least.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, meeting some other people that have, you know, experienced it. It's, you know, nice to have that backup. Like, you know, Lance Whalen, and when he joined the team, he was very skeptical. And he got the witness.
So you don't mind taking on skeptics?
No. You know, I like bringing on skeptics. And usually when they leave my team, they're believers. They're like, wow. I've done a couple public events where, you know, places have asked me to, you know, guest speak at. And probably one of the amazing ones was I had a Green Beret from Fort Campbell that his wife bought tickets for. And he came there with a chip on his shoulder, like, I don't want to be here. I don't believe in this crap. You know, she thought I would like doing this. And I took him out to the barn where we've had encounters with soldiers out there. And I said, usually they like bourbon, and I brought some bourbon for it. So I told him to introduce himself, you know, name and rank, and I did the same. And I set up these motion lights, and I said, look, if you want some bourbon, I'm not going to crack the bottle. unless you turn on one of these lanterns I've placed here in the barn. Mm-hmm. And all the lanterns lit up. Uh-huh. And he's like, oh, you're using a remote control. And I said, no, I'm not, you know. And I said, you can ask him. And I said, look, he doesn't believe you're here. If you can turn the lanterns on for him, you know. And so he had asked. And we had taken a vintage mug and poured, when we did pour the bourbon in it, because I said, all right, you turn on the lanterns for us, I'm going to pour the bourbon. So I poured that in the mug, and I put a EMF meter on top of the mug. Mm-hmm. And he says, we had a natural EMF tri-field meter along the path of the barn, mm-hmm. in the middle of it. And all of a sudden, that started being triggered. You could hear that going off. And all of a sudden, he felt this. He was standing opposite from me, and we both felt the breeze go right between us. And then you smelt this awful BO. Mm-hmm. And he had just got back from Iraq about 3 months prior. Mm-hmm. And he goes, oh my God, do you smell that? Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah. He says, it smells like someone hadn't taken a bath in weeks, like they've been out in the field. And I said, yeah, I can relate to that. And he's like, yeah, same here. He goes, I haven't smelled that in like 3 months. Mm-hmm. And he goes, I felt the breeze. And then I said, yeah, look at the mug. And the EMF meter, it had lights on it. It was a K2 meter. And it started blinking on top of the mug. And so he became a believer seeing that. Mm-hmm. And then we had asked Lance to sing a Civil War song in the house on guitar. Mm-hmm. And we placed 5 EMF meters throughout the room. Mm-hmm. And I told everyone, I said, don't say anything after Lance is done playing. Mm-hmm. And he had played this, I think it was Lorena, Civil War song. And he played that, and after he had finished, I said, if you liked Lance playing that song for you, could you light up a meter to let us know you appreciate it? Mm-hmm. And all 5 at the same time, spread out throughout the room, all lit up at mm-hmm. the same time. And he didn't leave as a skeptic anymore.
Wow.
And I asked him, I said, what are you going to tell him when you get back to Fort Campbell? And he's like, I ain't telling him nothing because they'll think I'm crazy.
Sure, yeah. What are the reasons for the souls that you've met, so to speak? Why do they still linger?
There's multiple. One, I think, is that they're just not aware that they've passed away, that they've left the body, mm-hmm. and they're, like, confused. Mm-hmm. Others are attached to a certain location or person or place or even, you know, an object. Another is that I don't think there's locks on the gate of heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Once we cross over, I don't think that, you know, there's rules that say you can't come back. Because there's just so many experiences that people have had of loved ones that have passed away and come back to help them in times of emergency or to relay a message to them. So I think they can come back. I think, you know, they can visit. So there's multiple reasons for different spirits. And I've had experiences where we've had EVPs, spirits responding, where one would interact with us that could mm-hmm. see us.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would hear another voice commenting to that spirit commenting. Like, a great example is at Ribbonville Plantation, we had the meters going off like crazy. Mm-hmm. And we're commenting, going, "Why? What's going on?" And you hear this woman's voice goes, "Woo, they're in a frenzy." And then you hear this other woman's voice goes, "Who are you talking to?" So it's kind of, is there different realms where certain spirits can see us and others can't?
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, I've had experiences with suicide cases. We've had 3 cases that involve suicide where the client had a family member mm-hmm. end their life and they felt that they were still there.
Mm-hmm.
And we had gone in and had EVPs to back it up, which was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And all 3 of those, my theory is that the spirit is in such grief
mm.
of what they had done, hurting their family members, that they've seen what they've done to hurt their family members, that they stay around to, I guess, look for forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had EVPs that are like, what messages do you want to give your mom or your dad or your wife?
Mm-hmm.
And every one of them, we've had them say, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry I hurt you.
Next, Mike shared with me a story about a ghost who had a message specifically for him.
I woke up at 6:00 in the morning feeling like someone was there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in bed, and I look at my bedroom window, And I could see through the blinds a silhouette of someone standing on my front porch. Mm-hmm. And I said, like, who the hell's on my porch at 6 o'clock in the morning? Mm-hmm. So I get my shoes on, I get dressed. I go to the front door, open the front door, seeing if they're still there. And I open the door and I look to the left. And there's this woman there wearing a khaki trench coat and her back to me. And I'm like, hello, can I help you? And she's crying. And she turns around and it's my dad's mom, mm-hmm. my grandmother. And I said, I'm like, hello? And she's like, hi, Mike, I'm so sorry. And I said, why are you sorry? And she goes, the way I treated you. Mm-hmm. And when my dad passed away in 94, we called her up to say that he had passed. And she goes, well, since my son's dead, I guess I don't need to keep in touch with you anymore. And I'm like, hey, I'm your grandkid. Wow. I would hope we stay in touch. And she's like, no, I don't see there's a reason. And she hung up. Mm-hmm. And we tried to call her back. She wouldn't answer the phone. I wrote her letters and lost touch with her. Mm-hmm. And hearing from other family members that she lived a lonely and depressing life, you know. And so she goes, I am so sorry the way I treated you. Would you please forgive me? Mm-hmm. And I said, yeah, you know, you've had a pretty hard life. I forgive you. Mm-hmm. And she's like, thank you. And she reaches out and gives me a hug. Mm-hmm. And I hug her. I could feel her frail body, her hair, her jacket. And I could feel her hugging me. And then all of a sudden I felt this overwhelming feeling of love. It was like really intense. Mm-hmm. And then she turned into this bright white light mm-hmm. where it was so blinding I had to close my eyes. Mm-hmm. And then she was gone. And I was in shock because she'd been dead for 7 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And I walked in the house. I go back and lay down on the bed. My wife's asleep. And I'm just laying there. And I laid there for 2 hours going, what the hell just happened? Mm-hmm. And then she woke up and she's like, are you okay? And I said, hang on to this. You know, this just happened 2 hours ago. Mm-hmm. I'm like still in shock. And I told her and she's like, wow. And I said, yeah. And she goes, well, let's get up and I'll make you a breakfast. And as I went to try to sit out of the bed, mm-hmm. the whole room started spinning mm-hmm. and I threw up mm-hmm. and for 2 days I couldn't shake that feeling of dizziness and nausea mm-hmm. and I had contacted several psychic mediums that I know and said, hey, what it just, you know, mm-hmm. what I experienced and why am I feeling this sick? And they had shared with me that the spirit energy and my body connecting, mm-hmm. you know, my body's not built to hold that mm-hmm. intensity of energy, and that's why I was sick for 2 days. And they were telling me, oh, you should have took a shower right away to try to ground yourself and eat some chocolate and this and that. And I'm like, well, I didn't know that. And but for 2 days I was sick from it.
Your website address?
Yeah, www.vssamparanormal.com mm-hmm. is the main website. And we're also on Facebook. You can look for Volunteer State Paranormal Research on Facebook. And we have a fan page on there where we share our data also.
Okay.
In the Corner Back by the Woodpile podcast is produced by A Closet, A Pocket, and A Suitcase. You can email us at spuncounterguy@hotmail.com. And a special thanks to thebrofisticate.com.
Bye.